Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host. Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them in our community, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. And on today's Women in Politics, we return for our second edition with Kelly DuLaCia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates.
I, too, am a product of the community that I grew up in York County. And the 96th District, we take great pride in the quality of our public educations. We have some fantastic public schools, and we need to preserve the quality of the experience that our kids are having. And that is what that base of a good education and a sound preparation to join the workforce or to move on into higher education, that's what creates upward mobility. And that's what the American dream is supposed to be about. And when you cut that out from people, out from under them, when you take away that hope or even the ability to be hopeful, that is going to devastate our society and specifically devastate our economy.
It's interesting you bring up, is there intent for portions of our community or our youth to not succeed. And certainly there are studies and commentary that show that if you don't have equal access to resources in schools, and you look at colleges or Ivy League or colleges that attract, you know, particular programs and professors, and they only pick a certain percentage of the top level. And there, I know it was, and me growing up and moving around and changing schools a lot, this was always through the conversation of how do you, if you don't have resources, you're not going to be one of those top students. For a while, they were trying to say it's not just that you need to put those resources in high schools, you really need to start in kindergarten. And yes, I look at this movement as going back to that area of really restricting access to educational resources for economically challenged families.
Right. Yeah. Like education is a civil right. Like it just is. And so, you know, when we had these Supreme Court cases back in the civil rights movement, can we just be done with that? Like, can we move on? And how do we create a budget that says, you know what, I want you guys to succeed, and I want you guys to succeed and help the economy, and I want you to succeed and be the best people you are. I heard that most of your personality is formed by the age of 10. So we have like 10 years to get this right so that we have a society of people that care about each other, that want to make things better, that care about the environment, good stewards of resources. And so I would take it back even further, a little bit before kindergarten, pre-K education, everybody having access to that wonderful foundation so that they can start off on the right foot. Or prenatal education, teaching parents how to take care of their babies and reading to them every night. So that's something that has been instilled in me. My grandmother and my mother, both teachers. My mother was a teacher of four-year-olds for 30 years. So even coming in and like reading to them after high school and just seeing wonderful classrooms of these future leaders, you have to put things in order for you to get things out. So just pouring out love and education and just wanting them to be the best that they can be, you can't do that without funding. And it's just, what are you expecting? Like, what is the result that you expect if you take resources from certain populations or from certain experiences? And you're going to get exactly what you put in. And so for me, also coming from an area where we just have an issue with gun violence, education is also an opportunity to create safer neighborhoods where you have kids in school programs during the summer, like a program we have called Spark back home and STEP. And we were able to decrease youth and violent crime over the summer in double digits and percentage wise. And for me, that isn't just a checklist thing for, you know, public safety, but it's lives that are being saved. And so education is more than just the classroom. It is so much more than that. And so when you link it to criminal justice reform, we are going to pay more with these cuts. I mean, exponentially.
On the other end, right.
Yeah, exponentially. Yeah.
It just feeds that school to prison pipeline.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And sort of in tandem with that, aside from racism and homophobia that can feed this type of policies, there also seems to be an anti-education movement, which I feel like I've experienced through my whole half century of time on Earth. Where do you think that comes from, that there's prejudice just toward education? Like, what is it about education and educated people?
It's hard to know because I don't even know how to think from that angle. So it's hard to come up with some sort of explanation or excuse for that type of thinking and really quite overt strides that Republicans are making to discriminate, not just against women, not just against minority communities or underrepresented communities, but really overt discrimination against children. And you really can make the case in a lot of different areas. You could make the case for discrimination against children with the decision that President Trump just made to back out of the Paris Accord. It's their world that he's deciding not to protect. And you could look at item after item after item where it's our children who are going to be facing how to solve these problems and digging themselves out of holes that we're putting them in or that we're allowing them to be put in. And that's why it really is so exciting that we're having so many Democrats step up this year to run. It's going to take time. It's not a quick fix, but I do think we're on the right trajectory to start to change the makeup of the General Assembly and have some more political power, which is what we really need to protect Virginians against some of these really extreme discriminatory changes that we're seeing at the federal level.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM. And on today's Women in Politics, we return for our second edition with Kelly DuLaccia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Now back to our show. And speaking of the environment, we have issues happening right here in Virginia, and especially maybe closer to your area in terms of Dominion and coal ash. How do you feel like that's going to affect your communities at all? And are you concerned that we're going to have a moment here where we end up with poisoned water? That's been
absolutely
one of the conversations and
we
fears.
Is that we're, if we don't step up at the state level to impose higher standards for control and oversight and accountability, fines, repercussions for breaches of those rules. If we don't step up at the state level and pick up the slack for the loosening that we're seeing with the federal level and really defunding the EPA and reducing the workforce and their ability to do their job, then we are going to see the Chesapeake Bay and the entire watershed slide backwards. And honestly, we can't do it alone in Virginia. We are so affected by the enormity of our watershed and how many other states really play into the quality of our water, which directly, again, affects our economy. I mean, we have world-renowned fisheries. We have people come from all over the world as tourists. And if we don't take care of our earth, air, and water, quite frankly, we're going to be up the creek without a paddle.
And yesterday started hurricane season. So living on the water, it's I'm ever present and thinking about the impacts of like sea level rise. The other day, I think it rained for like 30 minutes. There were parts of Norfolk that were completely flooded. So Norfolk is number two in susceptibility to sea level rise to New Orleans. And we saw what that looked like. And so local leaders are coming together in a bipartisan way, understanding that this is bad for people. This is bad for the economy. And it's real. Can we start there? You know, climate change is real.
And many Virginians don't know that our region is second in the country to New Orleans for being the lowest lying land.
And so with that, the fact that even in the General Assembly, the conversation starts with science is real, climate change is real. Okay, can we agree there? There isn't even 100% agreement there. And then to hear statements like fracking is safe, to hear that on the floor of the House of Delegates is very disconcerting. And so I think that it is important that we continue to educate and that we continue to fight back against those things, because if those are the people that are making the decisions, we are in trouble.
I don't understand how Republicans can hold on to this claim that they're the fiscally responsible party when these short-term decisions and these short-term changes are going to have such devastating effects on our economy in the long term. Fracking is a simple example. You can look at examples all over the country where communities have allowed fracking, and within a decade are ghost towns. literally ghost towns. It has destroyed entire communities that have been there for 200 years. And that is a real danger if we allow fracking in Virginia to expand.
Speaking about education, just to go back to that topic for a minute, and this prison pipeline, there's a program in Iceland where they work with communities to help teach parents to not only parenting, but youth not to start drinking. So it was a whole movement to reduce drinking in adolescence, and particularly looking at the aspects of the communities. And what they realized is parent and child engagement and interaction is, of course, the highest thing that needs to be done. They spent a lot of time changing the lives of one community and spreading it out, and they've made gains. And they're taking this program around the world, but not here. It hasn't come here, even though their researcher is from the United States, and he flies over there to help their community. He's doing a great job.
I hope that mass exodus of brain power does continue, because that is a very real threat that we are going to have a serious brain drain.
Yes. Why do you think that we can't start those communities here, knowing that drug use is another devastating impact on a community, and that looking at changing, once again, our policies and laws and going back to just incarcerating people for nonviolent crimes has proven to not be effective or useful in any way.
And this criminalization of children and the titling of their activities as criminal. I recently saw a suspension report for a first grader that included check boxes for arson, for inciting a riot. For a first grader, and I can't remember all of them, but this criminalization, this treating children like criminals, just really creates a system in which we're thinking of them that way, which leads, again, to the school-to-prison pipeline. It's one of many things, I think, that need to be resolved so that we can teach children like children who are learning life lessons, sometimes through missteps and serious mistakes, and really focus on rerouting them and supporting them and giving them other options. And there's so many ways that we can do that. We can do that through school programming. We can do that through expanding the arts and other things that children could be getting into through their high school years when we see dropout in other mainstream activities like sports. And that, you know, to specifically speak to your question, I think those things are easy solutions to how we can reduce underage drinking and quite frankly, drug use, which we know opioid addiction is
rising,
a serious epidemic in Virginia.
I mean, I think, too, the culture is not necessarily welcoming, you know, for a program like that. I think that we have some more foundational work to do before we even talk about what parents can do. Maybe if we raise this minimum wage that, you know, so that parents don't have two jobs, are not absent from the home, so that teenagers aren't raising, you know, their younger siblings. I think that there are some things that we don't do that support the family, you know, our diverse forms of families, but we don't support the family when we don't support the worker, or when we're not protecting and looking out for, well, what does the family structure look like? What does family dinner look like when, you know, between public transit taking so long, even if you only have one job that you get back, you know, after dinner time? So I think that there's some cultural things that we could do to have a message to the world that we are serious about the family, and family engagement is important. But I think we really need to do some work on some of those things so that those programs would work. The work that in Newport News and Hampton that the parent engagement specialists do in the Newport News and Hampton public school systems is amazing. But they're stretched far and wide, because when they get into the home, they see the amount of services that are needed. And so when a child is fighting against hunger or fighting against trauma or just mental illness or any of these things, if not all of these things, and then we send them off to school and we expect for them to be model citizens that don't ever get in trouble, that, you know, don't end up in the school to prison pipeline, that aren't already susceptible to being the problem student that, you know, we need to kick out for the sake of the other students. You know, that's what the argument is. We have got to target some of these real root causes for why our children may be acting out in the first place. And so I really commend that work, but they're proposed cuts to things like that, and, you know, in the education system. So it's all intertwined. And that's why that budget is just so terrible.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM. And on today's Women in Politics, we return for our second edition with Kelly Dulacchia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Now back to our show.
And we need to support the entire family. Virginian women make 78% or 78 cents on the dollar to men, but mothers only make 71 cents on the dollars compared to fathers. And I believe the General Assembly this year just voted down again the ability for women to get paid sick leave, paid maternity leave, paid family leave. There's so many important things that go on. As a recent mother, I can tell you, in those first months, in that first year, and for parents not to have the option to nurture their children in the right way at the beginning because they both work and they don't have the ability to have that free time, and we don't provide that fail-safe for them, it can start a lot of kids off on the wrong foot. And it goes right on up through the system without having universal pre-K.
And we talk about the intersectionality. Those numbers get even worse for women of color.
Absolutely.
You know, and so mothers of color, you know. And then those are some of the mothers that are being criminalized for not being there for their kids. Like, at what point are they supposed to go to the parent-teacher conference? Is this between the second and third job? I think we have some systemic things that set up families for failure that I would like to see worked on.
Absolutely. I hope I'll be able to join you in the fight.
Me too.
In our time left, what are some other significant areas that you're hoping to impact and change to improve our communities?
So one of the things that I've been working on, so I've been told that I'm not a millennial, that I aged out by 2 years, but my life is really millennial adjacent. So one of the things in just talking around the state to those of us in this generation, student loans is one of the largest issues. You know, you're kind of like demonized for still living with your parents at 22, 23, but your monthly payment for your loans is literally your mortgage, or you're not able to move into the area that you want to, or you're not able to take a job that's your dream job because it doesn't cover these expenses. So the decisions that our generation are having to make because of some of these loans with terrible interest rates, I mean, they look more like department store credit card interest rates than what we should be paying for education. So I think hand in hand with the student loan reform, it has to be affordability of college. These kids are doing the right things. Like, they're studying, they're doing their homework, they're playing sports, they're staying out of trouble. But then what? You know, after that. And so making community college more affordable, four-year college more affordable, having this high school redesign that's coming down the pipeline so that people can graduate with certifications and go into these wonderful jobs, that has come up. And still fighting these fights that Kelly has mentioned, I grew up with great role models like Dr. Mary Christian, former delegate, Flora Crittenden, former delegate, Yvonne Miller, former senator. But unfortunately, some of the fights that they were fighting before I was even born, we are still fighting those fights today in 2017. So in some sense, there isn't a lot of room for creativity and ingenuity because we're fighting for basic rights. When we're talking about making equal money for equal work in 2017, my head explodes that we have to have this conversation, or to not be called girl as an equal member of the House of Delegates by one of my colleagues, you know, and just some of these fundamental fights that we're still fighting. I feel like we still have to focus on these in some senses while we're trying to come up with these big, bold new issues that we want to fight for. So I'm literally in this to make sure that we're continuing those fights. But then I think with the diversity that Kelly and I would bring to the General Assembly, our presence is fighting heteronormative patriarchal norms.
That's right.
And so just my being able to raise my hand and speak and say Black Lives Matters from the floor of the House of Delegates in a seat across the hall from where former slave holders used to make laws, it's not an accident, you know, that I'm there. And so I take that very seriously. And so the fights for justice, the fights for equality, the fights for inclusion, those have to remain our main focus. And then we can kind of branch off into some of the other things.
There's been an upswing in violence in our communities, particularly targeting people of color, Muslims, LGBTQ, particularly trans, who have the highest rate of death. Mm-hmm. How will you help your constituents through it if it does?
Well, I think there are so many things, there's so many intersectional issues that that culminate in those statistics coming forward. Education, gun control, responsible gun control reform, making sure that those people who are convicted of violent crimes, making sure that individuals that are convicted even maybe at the misdemeanor level have their access to guns restricted. People in Virginia who are convicted of domestic violence experience no restriction on their access to guns. So certainly you have to look at gun control. Certainly you have to look at this criminalization of behavior in young people. And certainly you have to look at education.
You know, is it an uptick or is it that we just see more of it?
Because it's being filmed and out there, a larger
news force.
Maybe it feels like people film it, people excuse it, people walk away from it.
I think I would go with the word more normative.
It may be anecdotal. Yeah. But certainly as a resident of York County, I can tell you that there are big differences in the York County I grew up with or grew up in and the York County that I live in today. People are concerned. Voters in my district are concerned. And I know that there's a great deal of concern in your district as well.
Yeah, it's just, I think the difference is it's not new for us.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, broadcast on WRIR 97.3 FM. And on today's Women in Politics, we return for our second edition with Kelly DulaChia. She's a Democrat from Yorktown running for Virginia House of Delegates District 96. And we have Delegate Marcia Price, representing the 95th District in Virginia House of Delegates. Now back to our show.
This is something that, like I said, you know, my political idols were fighting before I was born. So I think that it is just manifest in a different way. When I was listening to some NAACP leaders speak, they were talking about Jim Crow is now James Crow Esquire. It's just a little bit more polished and he's driving a Beamer instead of a pickup truck. And so it may be more institutionalized as in what we see in this proposed budget, as opposed to necessarily a burning cross on my yard. However, the trauma feels the same. And so that's where the fight is and that's where the rub is. And so whether you've been in the struggle for decades or whether you just got to the table, you know, welcome, let us all work together, however we got together in this fight. Because like we said, if the ICE detainers and literally, quote unquote, rounding up our Latino members and neighbors and loved ones.
Tax-paying residents.
Hello. I'm pretty sure that there are some Asian Americans that have a, you know, similar kind of ugh that comes up because it happened in Japanese internment camps. And then African Americans, we're like, oh, wait, we're next. Law and order. Stop and frisk. So it's all connected. And now I think we're seeing that it's more connected. So we're joining together Black, brown, white in fights, rich, poor, because we see injustice as injustice. So I think that that is the biggest difference for me, that the allies are coming back together, where I think that there were some decades in between now and the civil rights movement where we were kind of separate in our own silos. So I'm starting to see that unity come back into place, and I'm very encouraged by that.
Do you feel that different minority groups will be able to come together? Because certainly the major party or the in aspects of white supremacy that has impacted our culture for so long has, some say, have done a really good job of keeping everybody's silo, that it's not necessarily one group going, oh, I'm going to be over here and do my thing and whatever.
Well, that's always been a tactic.
That you're separated. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been a tactic, I think, of having the wrong people in power, of trying to divide us against ourselves, basically. And unfortunately, it's been effective at certain times in history. But what I'm seeing, what I'm experiencing, and quite frankly, what I'm a part of in this wave of activism that we're seeing is people coming together in historic numbers to stand up for each other. And that is encouraging and that's inspiring. And quite honestly, that's part of what's inspired me to run.
And I think yes, infighting is by design, but I think we shoot ourselves in the foot sometimes as well when we don't come together in the right ways. And so, for instance, even within the feminist and womanist movements, when African-American women's voices are not taken seriously within certain women's rights movements, right? So that's a missed opportunity for us to come together. So I think we have to be intentional. I think we have to be intentionally and dramatically and radically inclusive. And what does that look like? It looks like me not telling you what you need, but me asking you what you need based on your experience. It looks like not continuing to divide ourselves by assuming that we don't want to talk to each other. It is, you know, when we look up and we see that there's a room and there's no diversity in the room, making sure that we, you know, combine with another group so that there becomes this diversity, and just going out there with that mission, but doing it in the right way so that it's inclusive, using inclusive language, understanding that even within a room full of African-American women, there is huge diversity. And what does that look like? What does true reconciliation look like so that we can move forward? I think we have to look internally and see what that strategy is and do it. And I think once we get that together, the other design for the infighting doesn't stand a chance. When we find that shared common ground, and then I would even add in poor white people, you know, like, because we have more in common in what, you know, the attacks on our access to healthcare. I have a lot more in common with someone that's out in the Southwest that may lose their insurance. And so finding those areas of common ground where possible, we have to be deliberate about that.
And before we close, anything you want to say out there to our listeners? That's a closing statement. I mean, that was great, though.
That was a great closing statement. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I would say for any woman that is listening or anybody that is listening, one of the things that helps move us forward in the political atmosphere is understanding that there is a double standard. There is more expected of us, and really and truly doing your research. I commend you, Kelly, for really digging in and seeing what does it mean to be delegate, because we have to be on point and we have to continue to slay because it is expected for us to fail. And so just that work ethic has to be there and the unity has to be there. And so I am just encouraging you, if you don't want to run for office, still be a part of the solution. And I really, really look forward to seeing this, because I think the future of women in politics is whatever we make it to be, because we are the ones that are going to make the difference.
Absolutely. Something that constantly weighs on my mind, and it's something I speak about, quite frankly, every time I'm in front of a new group, is not only the optimism that this new wave of activism has created, but really being realistic about how important it is to sustain the energy and sustain the effort and acknowledge that there aren't any easy, quick solutions, that this is a long siege and that it's going to take a lot of stamina, that we're going to rotate through new leaders, that it's important to develop the bench, not just for the assembly, but also for leadership in these new local groups, to be inclusive, to be comprehensive in our opposition, but also in our attack, if you will, in our offense. We cannot make a sustainable movement constantly on the defense. We have to get together and also have real conversations about what we want to move forward, what we want to be on the offense about, what things are we passionate about, and originate those or pick the threads back up, as Sia was saying, some of the places that we maybe let the ball drop. And so that's something that I talk about often and really keeping an eye on as I go through my campaign season through November, and really counting on this energy to be sustained through that election and well beyond, because it's going to take more than one election cycle for us to really turn the tide in Virginia.
Well, thank you both. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. To hear the show, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to WRIR.org.